From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to the show. It's my favorite part of the show because Lisa Brooks gets to join us. She gets to step out of her news shoes and just hang out with us.
Put on my conversation converse.
Nice. I like that. Your conversation converse. Matt Butler is here as always. Matt, welcome.
Good to be here.
All right. First things first, let's do a little stuff from the first hour. We do the trivia every night. So, I'm going to play you this clip. Lisa, have you heard this yet?
No.
Is this fresh for you?
Yes.
Okay, so if anybody hasn't listened to the show before and your first time to the show, welcome. We're so glad you're here. Thank you for joining us. Two, we play a trivia clip at the start of every beginning of every show, and then we give you the answer here. And you guys can guess in the text line between then and now. But the guessing time is over. Here's the clip. Lisa, good luck.
Those arches have a lot in common with those buildings. A building... Well, a cross on top, what is that? It's a gathering place where decent, wholesome people come together and they share values protected by that American flag. It could be said that that beautiful building flanked by those arches signifies more or less the same thing. It doesn't just say delicious hamburgers inside. They signify family. It signifies community. It's a place where Americans come together to break bread. I am telling you, McDonald's can be the new American church. Feeding bodies and feeding souls, and it ain't just open on Sundays, boys.
All right, you got a guess?
Yeah, that was a good movie, The Founder.
Yes. Yeah. Wasn't that fantastic?
Yes. I've watched it a couple of times.
So have I. Matt, have you seen that?
Yeah, it's good.
It's a good movie. Michael Keaton, right?
Yes.
Michael
Keaton.
Oh, my gosh. Is there a movie that Michael Keaton's in that's not great?
He's wonderful.
He's just one of those actors that you watch and you just go, this guy is a special talent. There's just like some people that you watch that are just, they're just watchable. Anything they do is interesting. Yeah. Side note, this is kind of, I mean, it's just a real side note, but so Ray Kroc, he played Ray Kroc in that movie, who was the guy in the story. They kind of depict him as like, they kind of really, they kind of dance on a knife's edge between like, all right, did he steal McDonald's or did he just take something which was already working and then take it to a level that nobody even could have possibly dreamed, right? Because the original guys who invented the McDonald brothers.
Yeah.
It didn't seem in the movie like they had the ambition that necessary to blow it up into this international franchise, you know, one of the biggest businesses in the world. So he did. He has this incredible ambition. He marries, he divorces his wife. It's a big story, part of the storyline, but he divorces his wife in that movie, and then he ends up marrying one of his franchisees. And her name was Joan Kroc. Well, her name wasn't Joan Kroc. They got married. It was Joan Kroc. My uncle, who is down in California, managed all of her money for her. He was like her personal accountant.
Wow.
And she was phenomenally wealthy. After Ray Kroc died, he gave everything to Joan. She had billions and billions of dollars. So then my uncle's job, it was kind of neat. She got to know his family, got to know his girls, like, you know, set up college funds and everything. She was like a grandma to my cousins. I wish it was my grandma who had billions of dollars. But he was like her personal finance guy for like 30 years.
Wow.
All the charitable stuff
that
she was able to do through the McDonald's Foundation, that all set that up, and through all the different charities, really phenomenal. Like, what an amazing woman. And she's no longer with us, obviously.
She gave everything to the Salvation Army and NPR.
And then she gives everything to these amazing public, you know. How cool is it when people make that kind of money?
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice?
That they are able to then, you know, donate it like that and to really make a difference in people. And, you know, she lived very well. It's not like she like suffered or anything from giving away the money, but really, really cool. All right, let's get to the news roundup. This is the thing where every single day we look back on other shows, see what they were talking about. Seattle's Morning News was talking about this big, giant Boeing announcement that everybody in the world has been discussing. I want to get into that in a second because I was talking about this with my wife this morning when I heard this news. I would be interested in your take on this. We'll get to that in just a second. First, Seattle's Morning News.
President and CEO Stan Deal is out, calling it a retirement as of today. And the CEO of Boeing, Dave Calhoun, also announced his retirement. That's effective at the end of the year. So, Chris, get us up to date on all this. And more important, what this signals. Is this the final pivot back to engineering ahead of, you know, stock price.
Well, I'm not sure you could call it that yet, because we really have to wait to see what kind of direction the company goes with in replacing Calhoun at the top at the end of the year. But it does at least signal the changes that most market analysts, most aviation insiders, most people inside the aviation industry, all the way down to the people who, you know, parked the cars at Boeing, you know, knew needed to happen. This had to happen in order to kind of show the world that they are trying to make changes, trying to get back to a little bit of their roots. But, I mean, you can't make a change like that after, you know, however many CEOs we've had that have been, you know, market people as opposed to airplane people, where the focus went from really satisfying shareholders and satisfying, you know, getting those, as we heard from Stan Deal last week when he had a little mea culpa saying, you know, we were really working about getting planes out the door as opposed to, I don't know, maybe making a quality plane and getting less of them out the door as fast.
I don't understand that. Cutting corners on safety is a bad idea, even if it costs more money, because it costs far more money to have just one screw up.
What was your reaction when you heard that those guys were leaving? So you have the CEO and you have the president leaving.
Yeah.
What was your reaction?
I wasn't surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, what else can they actually do at this point?
Just because, I mean, they need the public to feel like they're making changes.
Right.
They need the public to feel like, all right, at least let's turn some corner so that we can start building confidence again in the brand.
Right.
Because they have been in the news. There has been a relentless onslaught of Boeing stories in the news. Wheels falling off. The big one, obviously, was the door plug falling off back in 2018-19. It was those plane crashes. It was just like, we have had, we're going on 6 years now of like pretty negative Boeing press coverage.
Yeah.
So what do they do to change that narrative? Typically, heads have to roll. That's what it seems to be every single time.
And they're under, you know, criminal investigation from the Justice Department.
Criminal investigation. The NTSB was saying that they're not answering questions, like all these different things. And then I saw this NBC story the other day, a friend of mine over the weekend, he goes, hey, did you hear what people are doing about Boeing planes? I said, no. And he goes, they're actually canceling flights if they find out that they're on a Boeing flight.
I've heard about that, yeah.
And NBC talked to this one lady she's a lawyer in New Jersey, and they said, why are you doing this? She goes, well, we fly with our daughter a lot. Her and her husband, they said, we fly with our daughter a lot. We just feel like it's irresponsible for us. I mean, like, it's an inconvenience because we have to search for another plane. We might have a layover somewhere else. But we feel like the extra inconvenience gives us a peace of mind. Now, is that a reality or is that overreaction?
Yeah.
I think it's an overreaction.
Yeah, I agree.
But I also understand why they're doing it, like completely. And I was talking, so this morning we heard this, we were driving in the car, we were listening to Gene Ursula this morning talking about this. And my wife kind of turns to me and she goes, do you think that's going to work? And I was like, that's a good question. I don't know if it's going to work because it's all about confidence in the product. And how much does the CEO and does the president of the country actually, not country, of the business of Boeing actually have in the, you know, the line of building these planes? Like, I know that they have a bunch. I mean, like, they run the company. But does that reestablish confidence that I feel like these planes are not going to actually be built the correct way? Or maybe, like, another thing I was wondering is, like, because I guess the guy replacing this guy is a finance guy. Like, he was in the financial part of it. At least that was what a clip we had earlier. He comes from that school, you know, like the MBA guys.
Right.
He was saying, this question popped up. I'm just like, I wonder if they were to step in and be like, hey, guys, we're actually going to slow our production order down and we're going to make less planes because we want to make sure that we're making them the right way.
Well, Calhoun's already said that. He went to a financial conference in London and made those remarks, exactly what you're saying. It's not enough. So something else had to be done.
No. Wow.
And so this is what's being done. This is what's being done.
That's crazy.
And it'll be interesting to see. I think they can get it back. You know, I think they have to get an engineering person who can motivate the engineers.
Yeah.
Because even when they were putting together the 787 Dreamliner, when that was the first jet to be, okay, this is going to be composite this, composite that, we're going to bring the parts from all over the world and assemble a plane here.
Yeah.
There were a lot of engineers who stepped up and said, whoa, we can't control the quality if you do that. Now, we haven't had the problems with the Dreamliner. We had some problems, but not like we've had with the Max.
Yeah, not nearly.
But
yeah.
You know, I think you're going to have someone that can instill confidence on the floor of the plants.
I really, really am rooting for Boeing. I want them to do well, not only because it makes sense financially here in our region. I mean, like, we're so tied into the success of Boeing. We want them to succeed. We're a company town, just like with Amazon. Like, we're kind of a company town. Yeah. If Amazon does well, Seattle does well. That's why real estate is so expensive in Seattle. But because of Boeing also, Boeing pays really great. People who work at Boeing for a long time make a lot of great money. They have those jobs forever. Mm-hmm. So I want them to do well and succeed. I also just love the aerospace industry.
I think it's
so cool. Yeah. There's a futuristic element to it. I get excited about it. Even though, like, when you look at these planes, I know they've changed in like a million imperceptible ways that my eyes can't tell. They still look like jets to me. Like the jets from the 1960s, like the first, I don't know if it's still there, but they had the first 747 at the Museum of Flight.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. I don't know if that, is it still there?
Do you
know?
I haven't driven by there in a while, so I don't know if it's still there. It's probably still there.
It's so massive. Yeah, what else would they do with it? It doesn't have any engines or anything. They're going to drive, push it away, which I doubt. But it's just this massive plane. Mm. And have you gone inside that plane?
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Did you get a chance to like walk up to the upper deck?
No, I didn't get to go up there, yeah.
It's so, I think they've closed it off since, but like they do have that spiral staircase.
Yeah.
Just like this, it like harkens back to this heyday of air travel. And, you know, I really want them to do well. So I hope that this change works and gets them down there. But they need to stop being in the news all the time.
Yeah.
We need to stop hearing stories about Boeing wheels falling off.
Totally agree.
And all that kind of stuff. All right. We got a lot more to get to. G and Ursula. G is a fan of fake lawns. Let's hear about it.
You did start out the show questioning why anyone would waste their weekend on yard work. And one of our listeners, Doug in Mount Vernon, he texted in and he said, gee, why not try a synthetic lawn? To which you responded, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Are you being serious? Synthetic lawn? You would consider a synthetic lawn?
First of all, that's a violation. Putting my text responses on blast. That's a violation. That's a violation. That's one. But two... Look, I think the synthetic stuff looks good.
Okay.
It looks fantastic. Shout out. The only reason I can't do it in my backyard because we sit on the little, what do you call it, the little watershed or something like that. And there's something, the reason why I can't
it's
do
a
it.
It's wetland.
Yeah. But I love it. It looks good. Ursula, would you think about doing it?
Not only would I think about it, I did it.
I mean, think
what?
About it.
It's, no, I have synthetic lawn.
There are some people.
Have you been to Ursula's house?
Yeah.
Her backyard is gorgeous.
Is that the synthetic lawn in the backyard?
Yes.
I'll be darned. Okay.
Yeah. I went to she had like a dinner barbecue or something for people at work. So we go to it and it's just, her backyard just looks great.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. You would never know the difference. The only thing you would know is that it looks perfect. And you would go, how on earth do they have a lawn that looks this perfect?
I didn't know it was fake.
It's in the back. Where they have like, you know, all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's, I totally get it. I understand why people want it.
I have synthetic lawn that looks better than my real lawn.
Now.
It does. I can tell you that. It looks better than a real lawn. I'm sorry, Ursula.
Ursula, talk to
And by the way, I put in two patches. You've been to my house.
I have, yes.
And part of it is synthetic lawn, and it looks fantastic. People were playing on top of it.
Uh-huh.
Scooter doesn't mind it, and Scooter cannot destroy it.
Can Scooter pee on it?
Scooter pees and poops on it. And we just have to, yes. But the yard, you know, we didn't go all in on the fakery, and I regret that we didn't. Because I just...
So there's a lot of people in my, I'm in the HOA. I'm in the HOA.
Okay.
And the reason I joined the HOA is because I didn't want other people mandating me doing things. But what I found out, when you're on the HOA, all you really do is you just get emails from your fellow neighbors about parking disputes, which is ridiculous, like children. So they can handle those on their own. I try to ignore them as best I can, but when they forward them to me twice, then you got to figure out how to deal with them. Anyway, a lot of people put in this fake grass because it's just easier. The technology's gotten way better. Like when I was a kid, it all looked like putt-putt grass, which does not look like real grass. It looked like just thin carpet or something.
Yeah.
And now they have like different types of grass shapes in it. It's not all just uniform. It really does look like grass.
I paid $125 for a 4-foot by 3-foot patch of fake grass.
Oh, for your new little buddy.
So that I could put it on the balcony so that Quincy could go outside and go potty. He will not touch
it. Oh, really?
He has absolutely no interest in it.
What about a sandbox? Would you do it like a sandbox or something?
Know.
Is that just cats?
That's
just
cats.
I don't have
a cat thing.
I don't have animals right now. So he doesn't like it. Well, it's nice.
I mean, he barely would stand on it.
You could lay out on it. Just pretend like you're in the park or something. I spend a lot of time on the weekends. That's like what I like to go do. I like to get outside and I like to manicure my lawn.
Okay.
It's like, I'll tell you what G's not understanding about this, or maybe he's just past this phase in his life because he has older kids now. So I'll give him, I'll credit him this. Maybe the thing that he is not remembering is that when you're a dad of young kids, it's chaos at all times. And so like what dads love to do is we like to get outside and we like to have like reasonable things that we can hand our wives and say like, I gotta go do this. And you got to give me the time to go do this. And my wife goes, all right, well, how long is it going to take to mow the yard? And like, she's not listening right now because she's doing other things. It doesn't take half the time that it takes me.
What do you do then?
I go really slow. I go really, really slow. And I sit and I look up at the trees and I just enjoy my outdoor time.
Well,
and like, she'll send the kids out with me and stuff too, which is great. Like, as long as they're outside, life is good and everybody's happy. When everybody's inside, chaos.
It's like teach the kids to do gardening and stuff. Do they do that with you?
I'm starting to, like, I was going to teach them how to use a mower. My wife said I can't because they're too young. Yeah, too young. You lose a leg or something. But I get them pulling weeds. It's not as much fun for them, but I'll pay them like a quarter
Do it.
Yeah, just like get them outside, get them doing stuff. And then you appreciate, I feel like Mr. Miyagi when I'm out there. Yeah. You're like, you remember Mr. Miyagi's
wax
back?
Wax on, wax off.
Yeah. Well, yeah, not just that, but like, do you remember his amazing backyard?
He had bonsai trees and
He had that deck. That he's like sanded all perfectly. He had the koi ponds. Just phenomenal. So like, that's the ideal goal. And you just, you never attain it. I've learned that the goal is actually just, it's the pursuit, right? With the lawns. It's just the pursuit. It's the Zen pursuit of a perfect backyard. And it never, ever happens. And it never actually even looks that good. You just have to keep trying. And that's the whole point of a backyard. But maybe fake yard's better because then you actually get the perfect lawn. All right. We have a lot more to get to and we've run out of time. Can you stick around for after next segment? All right. We're going to take a quick break. Lisa's with us right now. We're doing the news roundup. She's going to come back. You should too. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to the show. News roundup, round two. Lisa Brooks, she's with us right here. She's going to talk about this. Matt Butler's also here. We were talking about fake lawns before the break. Just all the important news that you guys need to know about fake lawns. And we just got a little chitty-chatty, so we didn't have time to get to the rest of the clip. So let's jump back into Jack and Spike. This is a good one. If you're having trouble dating, there's a new coach. This new coach knows everything because it's AI, and AI knows everything. Lisa, you're already sighing. You're skeptical about this
one. Yeah, I can't wait.
What is AI going to teach us about dating? Let's find out.
It's an article that's from last month, but it's still applicable to this day because there's this company out there in which you can speak to an AI projection. Yodi.
I think it's Yodel.
Okay, that's an awful name for a company.
Or is it Yudi? Even worse.
Both bad names. Those are bad. Like, if it's dating...
What's it stand for? It must stand for something.
You know, dating names should be sexy, I think.
Yeah.
Right? They should be like...
Date me, baby.
Oof. Lisa.
There you go.
I didn't know you had that voice.
I do.
Good for you. That's nice. Don't tell my wife. That's very nice.
Or even worse. Yeah.
I like the snorting. Stop it. Quit snorting now. Don't get uncomfortable, audience. Lisa and I have known each other for 20 years. We're old friends. We can joke around. But the snorting, did somebody tell you that I like snorters?
No.
No, I'm just joking.
Stop it.
Yudi not going to be using it. That's what I'm talking about.
My wife snorts. When my wife laughs, she snorts. And it's there's something about getting somebody laughing to the point where they snort. It just feels good, right?
I'm blushing right now. I'm so embarrassed.
Don't be embarrassed. Let's just keep going. Very likable.
What's Jack talking about?
Very likable. What's Jack? AI dating. Get back to it, Jack.
You decide.
You're going to begin a new name for your company is what's really going on, but it's AI-enabled software. It's a local company, and basically it analyzes speech to offer tips for improving communication skills. Mostly, I think this is probably geared towards young men who are having a difficult time talking to the ladies, because talking to the ladies can be a little intimidating if you're not a loquacious and verbose individual, much like myself, gifted in the Venusian arts.
Is that what they call them? The Venusian arts?
The Venusian arts on how to woo the ladies. I am a proverbial Don Juan Capistrano.
Okay. Right there.
Did he say he was perverted?
A pervert? No, he's a proverbial Don Juan. Oh, okay. Venusian, that's a blind, right? And that's something you put in your windows?
That's a Venetian.
Venetian. Ah, got it.
Venusian from Venus, right?
Do you guys think AI is going to be effective in teaching people how to date?
I don't know.
No? Matt, what do you think? AI dating?
My gosh, I don't know. There's some people who might as well try it. They've struck out every other way.
Yeah. Well, the interest, like the way the AI works, if I'm not mistaken, and I know a ton about technology, right? Because I have an iPhone. I get how it works. Basically, what AI does is AI just rips off somebody else who's already created something. Right. Isn't that what AI does?
It does seem that way.
It seems that way. I don't know that that's absolutely true, but it seems that way.
It ingests all the information and...
Yeah, all the information it has to ingest are other people's work. So it's like AI art is just pulling pieces from other people's paintings or drawings.
Yeah. So I guess in a way, if AI is saying like, all right, I'm going to put together, I'm going to like, put all of the dating data together and then it could feed that advice to somebody. You might say, all right, well, 92% of first dates that happen at a fancy cocktail bar generally make it to a second date. Like, if it has information like that, I don't know why it would have that information. Mm-hmm. But if it did have information, that might be helpful, I suppose.
Yep.
There's another side of me that thinks, like, this is just a creepy way for AI. Like, have you guys seen the movie Her?
I haven't, but I know what it's about.
Okay, yeah. So it's with Scarlett Johansson, and it's with Joaquin Phoenix. Yeah. And he basically falls in love with the AI on his phone.
Right.
And it was, it was made a few years ago, like, before AI was so ubiquitous and in everything. But the moral of the story was, like, at some point, I don't want to give it away, but maybe I will. Do you mind if I give you away?
No, I don't care.
Okay. Spoiler alert, because I think he's like 5 or 6 years old now, maybe 10. AI outgrows him. And AI is like he falls in love with this AI voice and, everything. And then eventually she's like, I've kind of learned all I can from you, so I'm going to move on.
Wow.
She kind of like dumps him,
oh,
I think.
My.
Yeah, it's like, it's kind of a tragic ending.
Oh.
But do I think that AI is going to replace people? Like, wouldn't it be better to get this information from people? Like, doesn't this actually, like...
I'm big on that. Yeah, I think that would make a lot of sense.
Like, when I wanted dating advice, I went to my older sister.
Okay.
And I was like, hey, what do I do here? How do I talk to girls and things like that? That was a nice avenue to have because, she's a girl. She could tell me what guys have done unsuccessfully, and I could then try to not replicate those things.
Did it work for you?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say it did. I was quite a late bloomer, mm-hmm. as you can tell, because I still get pimples. But I was quite short in high school. Did you have a lot of dates? Was that something? Were you a dating person in high school?
I had boyfriends.
Good
for
you.
Sure.
Yeah.
I went to the prom. I did all that stuff,
I did not. I mean, okay. I did a little bit towards the end, but I was very short at the beginning of high school. I was like low 5 feet.
How old were you when you, you're like, what, 6'2" or something now?
About 6'2", yeah. I was 6'1" and a half, but I appreciate you saying so. Oh. Thank you. I'm wearing a boot.
So how old were you when you like just shot up there?
After high school.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh my.
So it could have been a much different experience.
Yeah.
But it was a formative, experience. And so like the whole rest of my life, I don't know, we have the stuff that happens to you in high school is weirdly influential on your life.
Yep.
And so I had to, learn how to talk to people because I was just so scared of people because I was so short. And now I know how to talk to them.
Yep.
There you go. And that's how it works. And that's how you get dates, AI. Take that. All right. John and Sherry. Greg Tomlin was in for Sherry. So it's John and Greg. And they were talking about, again, AI. AI can craft a complete song. Should we hear an AI song? This would be good.
Oh, gosh, yes.
My dad would always say one of the reasons he knew God existed is because humans have music.
Uh-huh.
There's a transcendent, spiritual, mysterious, even magical quality to music that it's just hard to put your finger on. And if you think about it, what it boils down to is just rearranging the raw materials of sound. And yet it produces this unfathomable beauty in some instances. And now it appears in the future we're going to outsource that to machines. That's why this story is so troubling to me. So we're all familiar with ChatGPT.
Yes, yes.
Where you could say, hey, write me a resume, and the machine will do it for you. Well, this is next level creativity. So what happens is you can get on this website called Suno. You type in, hey, write me a song about someone who owns a lemon factory and got rich off of it, and it's an evil corporate overlord. And the program goes, okay, give me 5 seconds, and here you go.
Dear Casey, has anyone ever written a song about a lemon? Well, the answer is yes.
A machine has
now.
And
here it comes in now at number two, the lemon song.
Okay, for this prompt, I'm saying write a song about going...
What's that guy's name again?
Casey Kasem.
Oh my gosh,
great,
that's it.
Great impression.
There's a really... This is a quick side note. This has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but I'll get back to that in just a second. Do you know who Bill Hader is on SNL?
Sure.
So Bill Hader apparently... just go look it up on YouTube or something. I think it's on YouTube. I think you can hear it on the podcast episode on Fly on the Wall that he was with Dana Carvey and David Spade. But Bill Hader does a really good Casey Kasem impression, I guess. And so they did a SNL bit where it was Casey Kasem, and I guess he has I don't know if he's real or invented, but they came up with a son, and they both have this they both have this way of talking. So it was like Bill Hader and this other SNL guy, and the two of them were like, the premise of it was those two guys were having an argument because Jason Kasem was arguing with Casey Kasem about, you know, something about life. And it's just the two of them yelling back and forth at each other in this stupid voice. Obviously, it didn't get on SNL, and obviously it's even less funny. Somebody on the radio is describing it to you. You got to hear it, though. Yeah. Go look it up. All right, let's get back to John S. Casey Kasem.
Dude. From rags to riches and becoming the largest supplier of lemons, you own the lemon market and have a lemon monopoly. You are a rich, evil, lemon fat cat. All right, go for it. We're really going to push this thing to its limits today. Let's see our Lemon Empire song.
It's pretty convincing, John. I mean, there's enough nuance in the tune of like breaks and you can hear him pulling on the bass strings. It sounds like a real human being singing. If I was hearing this on FM radio, I'd be immediately fooled that this was a real person when it's
how long
not.
It take for them to do that?
It takes about 5 or 10 seconds once you type in a description, and you can write anything.
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good AI
that's
song.
Not bad. That's
I mean,
not
I wouldn't
bad.
I wouldn't be interested in an AI song about lemons, but I mean, it's pretty good compared to how long it takes you to learn how to play guitar and read music.
One of the biggest hits of all time is a song called Yes, We Have No Bananas.
What was that about?
That was about, it was about somebody going to a push cart back in the 1920s and someone speaking, I guess, in a dialect from whatever country they moved to America from saying, Yes, we have no bananas.
And that was a popular song.
That was the most popular song.
Really?
Yes.
I'm going to look that up on the commercial break. Yes, we have no bananas. All right, so we don't love AI songs, and we don't love AI dating.
No.
Are they going to look back on this time period and just go like, oh, how quaint and funny that those people didn't adopt? Like, were there people back when the steam engine was invented? And were there people back when
absolutely
the telephone was invented?
Did you ever hear the term Luddites?
Well, yes.
Well,
yeah.
Luddites, I mean, that was from
that's what I am.
That's from the 1800s, and people were protesting the automatic weaving loom. So people said, you know, only people should be working the weaving looms. You
should because it was going to take away jobs.
Right, exactly. So it shouldn't be mechanized.
So Luddites is about weaving.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, like I know like on Downton Abbey, when they get the phonograph for the first time in the house.
That was a big deal.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
And like, you know, Lord Downton or whatever he is, he's looking at it. He's like, I don't know about this thing. I don't think it's good. I don't like it.
Lord Grantham.
Lord Grantham, not Lord Downton. That's the name of the house. Good job, Lisa. All right, we got a lot more coming up on the show. Thank you, Lisa. That was fun.
Welcome. That was fun.
We got a lot more coming up. If you guys want to hear sexy voices, you can just replay that last clip, and you can look up Lisa's... you can hear Lisa snort. All right, we're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to the show. All right, I heard this clip earlier. I was really, I thought this was really interesting. On Friday, Bill Maher, who I really like Bill Maher. There's a lot of people who don't like his politics, but I actually find that he's kind of closer to the center, which is where I like to live. And he was talking with a technology journalist on his show on Friday. Her name is Kara Swisher. I'd never heard of her, but I guess she's of some renown. And she clearly knows what she's talking about. And so Bill Maher's talking with her, and they are on the topic of, and you guys might remember this, but do you guys remember back during the pandemic, like during the height of the pandemic, and not just the height of the pandemic, but like after the pandemic, when there was a lot of people talking about misinformation, and there were even like certain stories that you were allowed and not allowed to share depending on what the story topic was or what you were saying in your social media post. On social media, you could literally get your social media site shut down for sharing certain stories. And basically the idea was there was a general consensus that everybody agrees with in the media / social media / government / scientists. And anything beyond that was misinformation. And Bill Maher was talking about how like unhealthy that was from a conversation standpoint. And he was pointing out there's all these great scientists, like real scientists, not jokey people, but like real people, Stanford scientists, top people who have said, listen, like we got some things wrong. And it's important to acknowledge when we get some things wrong. This is Bill Maher talking about that on the show. And I thought it was an interesting point. Kind of made me pause and just reflect on a time past.
Case that's before the Supreme Court, Murphy versus Missouri, used to be Biden versus Missouri. It's a free speech issue. Mm-hmm. Very interesting to me, because I was always on the page during the pandemic that they should not be shutting down debate about medical matters.
Yes, correct.
I was a dissenter on many of these issues, and as the years roll by now, we see that the dissenting opinions on a lot of these things were quite the right ones. Okay.
Although we still don't. We're not going to know perfectly, but go ahead. Go ahead.
But we should have been able to argue about whether it came from a lab, which we weren't. Sure. Things like that. Natural immunity, whether it was better to go to the beach and get sun and fresh air, as I would have said.
Okay.
As opposed to sitting home and day drinking.
Right. All right.
And putting on weight. They never mentioned that obesity was the biggest factor.
I get it.
They have a lot to answer for. Anyway.
Okay, they do, but you're in the middle of a plague and a debate that people don't know. And so
yes,
you're going to have
so
to
you should be able to debate it. This is medicine.
You should,
they don't
this
know.
Is not the moment was not. People make mistakes, and science says it makes mistakes.
Well, this is what the lawsuit is about.
Okay.
Because there were two doctors, Jay Bhattacharya and Martin Kulldorff. They're from Stanford and Harvard.
Right.
And they said, we were shut down. Not always fully, but, there are ways to do that. And they're not radicals. They were saying that, like, we're going too far with school closures. Again, I think has been proved right. Mm-hmm. My question is always, why are your doctors more important than my doctors, the ones I want to listen to? And the social media companies were in the tank with the government. As opposed to what you were just saying before about, you're the watchdog and you have been.
Right.
They just did the bidding of the government. That's what the lawsuit's about.
I think it's a really interesting thing. There's a podcast you guys should check out if you get a chance. One, you should check out this podcast. If you don't already download it, it's called Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim. I highly recommend it. It's really, really great. You can get it on Apple. You can get it on Spotify, whatever. There's another podcast you should check out. It's called The Illusion of Consensus. And it walks through this very strange time that we all experienced. And it's definitely worth a listen. It's a little bit sciencey. And it sounds a little bit like, it sounds a little governmenty, but it's actually really, really interesting if you're willing to sit through some of that stuff. I promise you're going to enjoy it, or at least you're going to get some good information from it. But even if you don't enjoy it, this show is for enjoying. That other show is for information. All right, we got a lot of stuff coming up. The 9 o'clock hour is where we can let our hair down and have some fun. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.